You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Next man up, 102.5, The Game, Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis from News 2, Parker Kelly with you on this Wednesday morning. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Not out at Titans practice today. We will be back tomorrow. No practice today. Pads have been on the last 2 days. Lots to get to. Do we have Corey? Maybe not yet.
He's in the Zoom.
Okay.
I'm going to get him pulled up.
Sounds good. Yes, we are going to get Corey Curtis with us. He is joining us remotely today, but lots to get into with the Titans. Of course, we'll get into some college football as well. The coaches poll was released yesterday. The Vols ranked 18th. Vandy receiving votes just on the outside looking in, so we'll get into all of that. And much more with Corey Curtis today. I went to a concert down in Franklin. I went and saw The Fray and Dashboard Confessional, and it was actually really, really good. I remember listening to The Fray growing up a little bit, but I hadn't thought about how many songs I actually knew of theirs, and it was a good show. It was a good show. Good little break here as we go through training camp. Again, it's been fun being out there the last couple of days. I am glad to have this day back in the studio, home sweet home. We're going to get Corey's reaction on everything that's gone on at practice. He's been out there. Parker's been out there. I've been out there. Yesterday, for Cam Ward, there was a big moment. The 65-yard dime to Carnell Tate, which, of course, came the second we went off air yesterday. We were talking at the end of the show about how it was kind of a meh day for Cam Ward. It just wasn't super crisp for him. Missing some wide receivers, wasn't a lot of plays downfield, and then we sign off. And in the commercial break, before Chase and Big Joe comes on, he gears up and throws the 65-yard bomb, drops it in the bucket to Carnell Tate. So it's one of those things where you look and you say he had the big moment, and you like to see that. That's something that he struggled with last year, was the downfield accuracy, being able to hit his receivers on the deep balls. We saw it with Alec Iamanner early on in the season, Calvin Ridley early on in the season, and it never really got all that much better. Yeah, he got a couple of plays downfield, the Ridley throw against the Cardinals. He had a nice throw against the Chiefs later on in the season. But that was a big concern heading into the season. That was a really good throw. I mean, he dropped it in the bucket from his own 25 and put it at the 10-yard line for Carnell Tate, who rolled into the end zone. So that's what you want to see. Overall, I would say it was a lackluster day for Cam Ward outside of that. I think he was fine in a lot of ways, but I think the big moment maybe overshadows some of the struggles he had yesterday. We are now joined by Corey Curtis. Corey, what's going on?
I'm delightful. How are you today?
I am doing great. I am great. I'm glad that we, this Wednesday, no practice today, so we can catch up on everything that's gone on. We miss you in studio. We do. You and Parker haven't been in studio together in like a month now.
Yeah, and you know, and we could have both celebrated the big victory over Scooble.
Yes,
last night.
Yes, yeah. Parker was texting me about that.
That's coming, Corey. Don't worry, we're gonna celebrate.
I wore my shirt to celebrate.
Oh, he's got the Cubs shirt on.
I love it.
You can't see it. Right
I can't
now,
see it, but I love it, yeah. Because you know I don't dislike Tarek Skubal. I appreciate everything he did for the Tigers, but it would be nice to see him work his way out of Detroit and then not win the World Series with the Dodgers. I think everybody's kind of rooting for that outcome. But congratulations. I did text. Parker texted me. He said he picked the wrong Tuesday to go to Wrigley Field because he missed out on Tarek Skubal. And I texted him back. I said, well, at least you saw a win. That's less likely tonight. And guess what? The Cubs still got it done. So congratulations to both of you.
Yeah, it's a nice win for the Cubs. And, you know, there is nothing wrong with Tarek Skubal. But one thing that I will always note about athletes, because in our business, we tend to have agents as well, and I think a lot of us forget sometimes times that the agents work for us. And if Scoobel really wanted to stay in Detroit, he could have told Scott Boras, I want to stay in Detroit. Let's get the best deal we can get in Detroit. So I'm not trying to make him out to be the bad guy, but we all love to vilify Scott Boras, and right so, but he is an employee.
No, that is true. If Tarek Skubal had told Scott Boras, I want to stay in Detroit, get the best deal that you can for me to stay here, he could have done that. Scott Boras, I guess the comments from the Tigers front office was basically they made an offer to Tarek Skubal and were told that he was going to free agency no matter what. So you're right. It's Boras is he's a symptom, but Tarek Skubal had the ability to do whatever he wanted, if he wanted to stay there. So he gets traded, and we'll see if anybody can stop the Dodgers. I mean, the NL has some really good teams. Your guys' Cubs, the Brewers, the Braves are really good this year. And in a short series, in a five-game series, you've got a chance. Tarek Skubal 0-2 in Game 5s over the past 2 years. So hopefully that continues now that he's wearing Dodger blue.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. I think the Dodgers have lost 5 in a row. And, you know, we saw them not be perfect in the regular season last year and then get to the playoffs and be a juggernaut. But, you know, the reason that I continue to like the Cubs is the best defensive team in baseball. And I don't think it's particularly close. Their defense is dynamic. They are capable of hitting the ball out of the ballpark. They had too many injured pitchers. And so they went out and got 5, I think, at the deadline. And we'll see if they're the right 5.
Yeah, I did see that the Dodgers, since trading for Tarek Skubal, are 0-3, and the Tigers, since trading Tarek Skubal, are 3-0. So, you know, maybe things work out the other way than you would have expected them to.
So it's Tarek Skubal's fault that the Tigers stunk this year.
Yeah, hey, the Tigers are a game and a half out of a wild card spot, so don't look now. Even after trading away their best two pitchers, they've still got a chance to go out and get into the playoffs. Corey, I wanted to get your thoughts on Titans practice the last couple days. Pads have been on Monday and Tuesday. All three of us were out there yesterday. I think the last 2 days for Cam Ward, it's like two very polar opposite days. Monday, I thought he looked good, clean, crisp, except for the two horrible mistakes on the interceptions. He had two really bad plays that kind of overshadowed the good that he had the rest of practice. Yesterday, I thought it was a little bit erratic, inconsistent with his accuracy, but then you get the big play touchdown to Carnell Tate that kind of overshadows that, and he didn't turn the football over. So I would say, on a whole, I thought his practice Monday was better just with two big mistakes, whereas yesterday, I didn't think it was a great day for him, but he did get the big exclamation point towards the end of practice.
Didn't he say in Netflix, when he said what he learned about the NFL, is that you can throw late across the middle?
Yeah. Yeah, he did say that.
I think he said that in episode one. And you know, and Robert Saleh was right when he talked about the fact that you can, because, look, we saw him do it in the touchdown to Alec Iamanner, the touchdown to Jeffrey Simmons. I think he had a throwback to Xavier Restrepo.
Yep.
But, you know, that's when you stretch the play way out and the field gets spread way out, and not when you're throwing into a crowd. And the one to Jermaine Johnson was in a really thick crowd, and the one to Amani Hooker was, I mean, he was over, the guy was already double covered, and Hooker stepped up, and he was a third guy in there. So that's what made, you know, those decisions so poor. And, you know, regardless of how good everything else was, those are going to be glaring because those are bad mistakes. And, you know, you'd say those are rookie mistakes, but he got away with it as a rookie. And so, you know, he saw it in practice. And I think Brian Daboll said yesterday morning, lesson learned. And so I think Cam has shown to be a learner from things in the past. So we'll see, you know, how quickly that takes. You know, yesterday wasn't totally clean. You're right. There were a couple of mix-ups with Carnell Tate.
Yep.
Before the big one. And you know, I always tend to lean on receiver ahead of quarterback on those. But I don't know. I don't know for sure on that. But you know, what I have seen is that seam route to Wandale Robinson is all day long for him. and he throws it with a ton of confidence and with a ton of steam on it. And so I think we're going to, I think what we're seeing is we're going to see a lot of that. And I also thought Chim Dike looked really good yesterday.
Yeah.
And was more involved as well. So, you know, the offensive line has its hands full. That's clear. And Cam, not perfect. I don't know. I don't know if I thought it was terrible yesterday. You know, you certainly want it to be better, but I also certainly expect this defense to be ahead of this offense.
Yeah, and I think mix-ups is the right word on some of those. Like, some of the passes were just inaccurate. Like, there was a pass on a crosser to Wandale Robinson that he kind of short-hopped. But I did see a couple of times where the ball would be thrown so inaccurately that you kind of just had to know that they weren't on the same page. And one to Carnell Tate, one to Calvin Ridley, where you could see them pointing with each other where they expected him to go. And that's why you have these practices, right? This is why you have training camp, to be able to work out those kinks. And hopefully when you get to real games, Calvin Ridley, Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson know where Cam Ward expects them to be when he throws the football.
Well, I mean, you know, on the one to Carnell Tate, Tate went in and he threw out.
Yes.
So clearly there was an expectation that he was going to go out on that one. And then the one on Ridley you're talking about, that was a play where Cam had extended the play.
Yeah.
And Ridley was freelancing in the middle of the field. And he expected him, I think there was an open gap to his right, Ridley's left. And he expected Ridley to flow to it.
Yep.
And he didn't. So that was, you know, and like, I'm not, you know, you got two guys trying to read each other's minds there.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, look, that's where Ridley and like Will Levis couldn't get together, was getting on the same page, you know, with right where exactly he was going to be. So I think, you know, there's some history there of not always being able to get on track with the quarterback.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, our phone and text line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai, online at wilsoncountyhyundai.com. You can join the conversation at 615-737-1025. Titans in pads the last 2 days in practices, off today. They'll be back out at Vanderbilt Health Football Center tomorrow. Cam Ward obviously going to be a big story anytime the Titans are out on the practice field, and we'll get more into Cam Ward later in the show. But the big story yesterday, big skirmish early on in team period. Jeffrey Simmons gets kicked out of team drills and has to go work on a side field. We'll talk about how Robert Saleh handled that situation and much more coming up after this. 615-737-1025. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up. 1-2-5, the game.
No, our policy is if you throw a punch, you're ejected in the game. Same thing with practice. If you throw a punch, you're out of practice. But rather than going to the locker room, he went to the other fields. He still got his work in. So the projected reps and the work that he would have got in, he got in off to the side.
I'll get to just the back up for it.
That was Robert Saleh yesterday on Big Jeff being kicked out of team drills after an early scuffle with the offensive line. J.C. Latham, Austin Schlotman in the middle of it. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly. I'm surrounded by Cubs fans this morning. But I'm happy for the Cubs fans getting it done against Tarek Skubal yesterday. He went, what, 6 innings, 200 runs?
He had 6 strikeouts, too.
Yeah, he didn't pitch poorly. But, you know, Dodgers scored 1 run. That usually gets you beat.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, you do have to score to win. Corey, what were your thoughts on Robert Saleh, the way he addressed the scuffle yesterday? It got pretty heated pretty quickly with Austin Schlotman and Jeffrey Simmons. J.C. Latham gets in there. There was some pushing and shoving. I guess since he got thrown out of practice, I didn't see Jeffrey Simmons throw a punch, but you would assume he did. And then after another little skirmish a couple of seconds later, you saw the Saleh shut down practice, bring the whole team together, and settle things down. What were your thoughts on the way Robert Saleh handled his first inter-squad kind of scrum that went on? I won't call it a brawl, but scrum between players.
All right. Well, first off, I'm ready to go. I've officially got my coffee.
Best person ever. I love it.
Ever. I'm ready to go. You know, I thought it was interesting because I believe the fight with Simmons and Schlottman and then Latham was the first. Was it first or second play of 11 on 11?
It was one of. I think it was the second play.
Yeah, it was close to the beginning. Really close to the beginning.
Yeah, it was play one or play two where I was like, come on. You know, and then like the Io Manor Marcus Harris fight was like one or two plays after that.
I think it was the next play, and that's why Sala kind of just said, all right, everybody come together. We're stopping this now.
So, you know, look, 98 getting in a camp fight is nothing new, okay? I mean, that is something we have seen many times before. And, you know, Parker's been out there to be right where Coach Whitecotton and that defensive line group is. I mean, he's like Jim Washburn. He gets those guys torqued up pretty good. I mean, they are operating at a pretty intense level. And so it's, you know, and the offensive line knows what they're up against. So it's not surprising to see the intensity boil over a little bit there. Now, a couple things. One, Jeffrey Simmons is the best player on your team. It's his team. He's the leader of this team. He's in his eighth year in the league, I think. So he's got to be a pro at some point. You know, you've got to be able to, you know, look, it can boil over and you can have the pushing and the shoving and the trash talking back and forth. You can't throw a punch. And, you know, and I think Sala's point was this. He'll handle the fighting, but you throw a punch and everything changes because Jeff could break his hand. He could concuss somebody by hitting him. You cannot have that. And so the second part of that is how does he, you know, does he follow through with it? You know, because there was a lot of criticism of Brian Callahan for not disciplining Big Jeff after a training camp fight. And so, you know, Sala, you know, immediately was basically, hey, rules are rules. You threw a punch, you know, doesn't matter who you are, you're out of a game. And so you're out of practice. And, you know, I think, you know, sending him to the side rather than the locker room is better because not only is he getting in his work, he's getting in a lot more work. There's no rest over on the side.
Yep.
There's no rotation of line groups on the side. There's no time between plays on the side. It's just work. And so, you know, he got in more work, you could say, yesterday than he would have gotten if he was with the team. So, you know, I don't overreact to the fight. I am disappointed with the throwing of the punch and just not being a pro in that scenario. But I'm also, you know, I think that was a moment for Robert Sala, you know, a test of his leadership early, you know, with the team and with fans, because I think that matters to a lot of fans as well. And so I think he passed yesterday.
Yeah, I do think that given that the almost the exact same situation unfolded in the first training camp under Brian Callahan, and he was criticized for the way he handled it, of not kicking Jeff out of practice, I think Robert Sala did a nice job of, hey, I don't care who you are on this team. If you throw a punch, that's going to get you ejected in the game. We're going to throw you out of practice too. And I like that he stopped practice after tempers continued to boil after that. He brought everybody together and nipped it in the bud. And there really was no issue the rest of practice, which I think shows you that those guys are willing to listen to Robert Sala's leadership. It was chippy, you didn't see any other
control.
Right. There was no carrying on after the whistle for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, there was one time where Alec really planted Cordell Flott and let him know about it afterwards, but nobody got into it again, and that was the important thing. Because, you know, I think they've only got like 15 padded practices for camp. You can't waste any. You can't. Especially in your first year as head coach, you know, trying to establish what you want to establish with this team, and especially a team that's won 6 games in 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have many of these practices to truly get better. And so you can't have one wasted so guys can rumble. And so, you know, how you get that under control and the work that you get done afterwards is important. By the way, we haven't brought this. Rough day for Mitch Trubisky yesterday.
Yes, it was. It was not a good day for Mitch Trubisky. Three interceptions? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was close to having four.
Or five.
Yeah.
Or five.
Not Cedric Gray. Anthony Hill had two off of him, and then James Williams had the one-handed pick against him. So, yeah, three. Yeah. And, yeah, he had the one, the two-minute drill. He actually ran pretty effectively and got them into the end zone. But outside of that, yes, it was a tough day for Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah. And by the way, it's in, I know we got a lot of show to go, but just we're talking about quarterbacks. You know, Will Levis hooking up with Bryce Oliver for two big ones yesterday. I mean, you know, really nice job of laying it out there, showing touch, and Bryce having a step. And the second one, especially Bryce pulling it in, I think, between two guys.
Yes.
For I don't know how many yards each of those were. They were at least 40, 50 yards.
Yeah, the first one was it was kind of over the middle of the field, and Levis did a nice job of laying it over the safety, and it was it wasn't a perfect throw, but it was a catchable throw. And in that situation, that's kind of what you're looking for. And then you're right, the second one was more Bryce Oliver just going up and snatching it, which was good to see.
Yeah, and Will put it out there for him. And you know, look, we've seen Bryce Oliver shine in camp before.
Yep.
You know, we saw him and Malik Willis really, really work together. And, you know, I really like Bryce Oliver, you know, as a special teams player. And, you know, you've seen him produce on the field in practice. Now, he hasn't gotten much of a chance in games, and he has had some injuries, but I think he can be a guy who helps this football team. I mean, he is big. He is strong. I don't know if you've ever got a chance to like see him up close. His hands are just monstrous. I was talking with him after practice the other day, and he slapped my hand and like grabbed it, and it was like twice the length of my hand. I was just like, what is that thing? I mean, just, you know, just gigantic. And he works hard and embraces his role. And so this is my annual pitch for Bryce Oliver.
Well, I think he was the guy that we expected was going to be the leader in the clubhouse for wide receiver six heading into training camp because of what Robert Saleh said. He was asked, what's going to be the big differentiating factor for the guys at the back end of the roster? And it was special teams. You better be living in Bones Fossil's office. And Bryce Oliver, we know, does that. And any upside that he can give you on the offensive side is just a cherry on top. And it was good to see him making some plays with the third team yesterday.
It was interesting. I asked Bones yesterday about Elik Iyemanner in special teams, because if Elik is the four or the five in the wide receiver room, and because we don't know at this point, and that's what he said it comes down to, you know, for Elik, is how much offense he plays will dictate how much he's available in the wide receiver room, because there was no question, it was written all over Bones' face. He loves looking at the athlete that Elik Iyemanner is and seeing what he could do with special teams.
Yeah,
would I rather see him playing offense? Yes, I would. But he's too big and too strong to not have out there.
Yeah, we talked to him yesterday, and he talked about just everything that he did in the offseason to get ready. Oh, we got a special guest on the program here.
It's the sports cat.
The sports cat has joined us. Yeah, I mean, I think that he probably will need to contribute in special teams if he is wide receiver four, wide receiver five. While we're on the topic of wide receivers, Corey, we all, Titans media fans, we all did it again. We hyped up Xavier Restrepo off of offseason work, and he has been non-existent in camp so far. I cannot say that I've noticed him once.
I've seen him catch a few balls. He certainly caught more balls than the tight ends have.
That is true. The tight ends have been relatively non-existent too.
But the thing is with him that he's up against it. I mean, regardless of how good he could be in camp, he would have to be electric because he's not going to be a gunner. He's not. Yeah. And he's not going to return kicks. You know, so, you know, it's tough for him to carve out that role on special teams when the one job that he could probably do is taken. And then the other jobs, there are bigger, stronger guys to fill those roles. And so you know, he's, you know, if he's going to be your wide receiver 5 or 6, you know, or even 7 on this team, what's his role? What's his role other than being inactive on Sunday? And so, you know, more likely to be back on the practice squad again this year.
Yeah, 100%. And camp's long. There's still opportunities for him to flash, and he'll get reps in preseason games. But I agree that we were talking about him as a contender to make the roster. I think he's going to be a practice squatter again this year based on what we've seen so far.
It's a numbers game for him and a role game. And unless you're prepared to put him out there in the slot, he's not going to be able to give you what you need with the numbers on the roster.
Yeah, it's like our conversation about a few years ago with Julius Chestnut versus Hassan Haskins. It's like, well, they like Julius Chestnut carrying the football. Well, if he's not going to carry the football, what is his value to this team?
And that was a mistake then.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that's a great example, Jake, and it's what I don't want to be insulting, but it's what a real football team does. It's the right, that's the decision that they make.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Keep up with Titans training camp with 1025 The Game for the latest updates, player interviews, and more as we get you prepped for the upcoming Titans season. Coverage of Titans training camp is presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants, Parman Tractor and Equipment, and Tri-State Water, Power, and Air. More Titans talk on the other side. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly alongside you. Recapping the first two padded practices of Titans training camp. They're back on the field tomorrow morning, and we will be live starting at 9 a.m. from Vanderbilt Health Football Center. Corey, I've got a text here. We were talking about Xavier Restrepo. Rick says, the Lord will carve a role for Xavier Restrepo. So I guess
he might.
I guess it's decided.
It happens. Look, I mean, look at Mason Kinsey and how long he's been on this football team.
Right.
I mean, every year he seems to find his way onto the field. Yeah, every year Nick Westbrook-Ikhine would start as wide receiver 4, 5, or 6. And every year he would be starting by the end of the year. Sometimes things work out and guys find a way. The important thing is to make yourself valuable enough to keep around for when that opportunity shows up.
Yeah, and I do think that Restrepo could end up being the Mason Kinsey replacement on the practice squad. Maybe a more talented receiver, but he will have to add to what he can do as a special teamer.
Not as fast,
but probably shiftier, better at getting open in short areas. So right now, based on what I've seen, Restrepo is not going to be on the roster. But, again, it's a long camp. There's still a long way to go, and he'll get his reps in the preseason. Another text here, 4312, says, I'm more worried the frustration with JC is just indicating JC is being lazy and he isn't taking a step forward. I don't know about that. I haven't noticed JC getting beat in the last 2 days of practice, at least, and maybe you had a better view down there. I will say, J.C. Latham pancaked Jeff Simmons during that scrum yesterday. We need to see more of that between the whistles, but he did. He got Jeff Simmons on his butt there for a second.
Well, one of the things I have noticed with J.C., and J.C. talked about getting the mental coach on Saturday, he looks like he is attacking practice with a much more aggressive mindset. He looks like, and this has nothing to do with the fighting or anything. And by the way, he wasn't the one who started that fight. He came into Austin Schlotman's defense, which is what a good team does. And by the way, what you also do when you're the biggest guy on the field. But he is attacking practice and his reps in a much more violent and hostile way. And frankly, he needed to.
Yep.
He is too big and too strong to not be a physical, imposing, intimidating presence out there. I mean, David Stewart was a great big guy, and he said about 3 words in 7 years. But nobody messed with David Stewart. Nobody. Because you knew he was a bad dude. And if you messed with him, he was going to punish you. And so, you know, we've seen other tackles, you know, like that, especially the right tackle position in the past. And so, you know, is that JC? You know, it maybe it hasn't been. Maybe it's something he's evolving into, you know, and does he have to learn to harness it? Probably. But Parker, I don't know if you've seen it as well. I see a guy who's hitting the practice field with a much more combative personality.
In the individual drills, he's definitely looks like he has that violence that he maybe didn't have those first 2 years. And just when he's hitting the pads, it's just like he's thumping it. And I didn't see that the first 2 years. And I'd love to see that carry over more to team. And hopefully he's not rotating in and out like he has been with Austin Deculus and Brandon Crenshaw Dixon. I just hope we start to see that ramp up more once we get to these joint practices, preseason, and so on.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to practice with it to play with it, right? So that's you know, the first start of it. And, yeah, they've got to, you know, continue to ramp him up to make sure he's 100%, you know, to go. And I think the first real test of that is next Tuesday in San Francisco, right? I mean, that's when, unfortunately, we won't see it in the practice. And, you know, I know Coach Sala has said the starters are all going to play in the game, so we should see it some in the game on Thursday night on News 2. And so that's the first real test.
Yeah. And, we're 6 days away from that joint practice out there in Santa Clara. So you're going to see these guys get tested. There was somewhat concerning news. Again, we won't know more about Dan Moore's status until tomorrow when Robert Sala speaks or when the team hits the practice field. But, that was one of the few players, like, you never want to see anyone get hurt, but in terms of top five guys you really don't want to see go inside during practice, Dan Moore is definitely one of them.
Yeah, and, you know, so I saw him. I was down there by the linemen when they did their one-on-ones, and Dan Moore got beat badly a couple of times, which was really concerning.
Yep.
And then a short time later, I saw him limp off the field, and I was like, okay. I'm wondering if he was dinged over there, you know, because he didn't look good.
Yeah.
He didn't look good at all. And then he limps off. So I don't know how bad the injury is. They didn't help him off. They didn't cart him off. He just had a light limp coming off, but you're right. He is absolutely someone, you know, regardless of what you think about him, he's the best they got. Okay. They need him out there.
And if Dan Moore is seriously hurt, and again, we have no idea. He walked off under his own power, so that would make you hope at least that it's not something super serious. We'll find out more tomorrow.
And is it a muscle or is it an ankle?
Right.
That's what we don't know.
We have zero clue what the injury is or the severity of the injury, but I do think that you look at the swing tackle depth here and it's like, all right, Brandon Crenshaw Dixon can't be your starting left tackle in week one. They're going to have to go outside the building. And there are still options out there. Taylor Decker, Jack Conklin, they're still out on the open market. So, like, there would be options, but right now, fingers crossed that it was just out of concern that Dan Moore was pulled out of practice yesterday.
It still, and it again just brings it makes you scratch your head with how they. The lack of aggressiveness they had in attacking the offensive line this offseason, especially with the amount of cap space that they have. It makes it more puzzling. So, yeah. And by the way, Darnell Wright with a massive contract
yesterday for the Bears.
Again, I just continue to think that Peter Skoronski package is going to be gigantic, way bigger than we all anticipated.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday, Corey, the Matthew Bergeron extension that he just got with the Falcons, 4 years and $96 million. Like, Matthew Bergeron on the top 10 interior offensive line list, which, again, it's not the gospel. Like, it's not everything. But he didn't get a single vote as a top 10 interior offensive lineman. Skoronski was ninth. Like, it's going to be a big, big contract.
Yeah, it's going to be 4 years and over $100 million. I'm confident of that.
Yep, I agree. It will hit nine figures in the total money going to Peter Skoronski. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at 1025 The Game for live shows and exclusive content. We'll finish up the first hour on the Titans. We've talked about some standouts from training camp so far in these first two padded practices. I want to flip over to the defensive side. There have been a few guys that I noticed the last couple days that would be big developments for the Titans if they can get contributions out of them this season. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up. 1-2-5 the game. Today, the Nashville Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds. First pitch is at 6:45, and you can catch all of the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Maple Street Biscuit Company, and Social Cantina. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly with you. Wrapping up the first hour, talking Titans training camp. First two padded practices wrapping up earlier this week. Another one coming up tomorrow morning. Corey, I wanted to get to a couple of guys I've noticed that have stood out. We talked about some of the wide receivers. Bryce Oliver had a nice day. Elik Iemanner and Chim Dike have both flashed at times. The linebackers on defense. Anthony Hill with a couple picks yesterday. He's been all over the field. And how about James Williams? He has three interceptions so far in camp. He's been a pleasant surprise so far at that off-ball linebacker spot.
You know, he's so long. I mean, he's got long arms, and what is he, 6'5"? And I know, like, one of those interceptions, I think it was Trubisky, was trying to layer it over the top, and he just didn't account for how long James is.
Yeah.
And he went out and got it. Now, both Saleh and defensive coordinator Gus Bradley went on and on about the way James has changed his body. You know, I think he got up around 250 pounds last year, and they've asked him to drop weight, and he dropped about 20 pounds. And so they're both really happy with how he attacked his body and his off season. He appears to be playing, you know, with a level of confidence, and you know, so. You know, with you, if you've got Cedric Gray and Cody Barton and Anthony Hill, and you know, if James Williams is a viable option, then you can have, you know, you can absorb an injury,
yep,
and put a guy out there that you like, and you know, that's, I mean, he was a seventh round draft pick, right?
Yeah.
If he can be a productive player for you, that would be really good value. That would be really good value for you. So, it has been nice to see. You know, that group as a whole, you know, really, really showing up, because, you know, I know Cedric had an interception earlier in camp too.
Yes.
So that's like six interceptions from those guys. That's a lot from that. I mean, you'd expect that from the DBs, and, you know, we're seeing it from the linebacker group.
Yeah, that is true. I'm trying to think of other interceptions. Hooker obviously had the one on Monday against Cam. Jermaine Johnson had the one. But outside of that, has it pretty much just been the linebacking group that's been able to pick off these quarterbacks so far?
There was another secondary defensive back who had one, and I can't remember his name.
Yeah, it is tough. Like, Taylor and Flott haven't had one yet. Winston hasn't had one, at least that I can remember. Kedrain Callaghan had a nice pass breakup yesterday. I want to say it was either Hooker or Levis who was throwing the football in one-on-ones, but Callaghan went up and made a nice play. Parker's guy.
I didn't see the one-on-ones because I was watching the defensive linemen.
Gotcha. Yeah, we're up on the, like, terrace up above the first field, and so I got to watch a lot of the wide receiver corner one-on-ones. Callaghan was one of the guys that I noticed the most in those drills. I'm gonna throw this name out there, Corey. I know we've disagreed on him before. I thought Femi Oladejo had a great day yesterday.
Oh, really?
I noticed him multiple times.
What did he do?
So I said it initially that I noticed him forklifting a guy back into the quarterback, and then I realized it was a tight end.
Okay.
And so that happened twice. And I said, let's see him do it against a tackle. He did the same thing to a tackle a few plays later. And then the last play of practice yesterday, where Anthony Hill had the interception, that would have been a sack. In a live game atmosphere, because Femi Oladejo was the one who got to Mitch Trubisky's hand and forced the ball to flutter up in the air. So I will say, Femi Oladejo, it's one practice. He was working against the twos for the most part, but I did notice him multiple times yesterday.
Well, so I did watch Femi some yesterday. I saw him in the one-on-ones, and my criticism is not effort at all. And it rarely is with any of these guys, is not effort at all. There's no variety in what he's doing. And like he, in the one-on-one drills, he basically just, you know, kind of went wide and turned in and hit the tackle straight in the numbers and stoned himself twice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no rip. There's no turn. There's no swim. There's no forklift. There's no spin. I mean, there was nothing in any of those reps I saw over there. And I just kind of threw up my hands. I'm like, isn't this when you work on this stuff? And so, you know, and then I watched him in 11 on 11 early on, and I saw much the same thing. And so now, truthfully, you know, after that, I wasn't as focused on him as I was before. So it sounds like I missed his better reps, and it sounds like he was more active, and that's good to hear. Because what I saw for the first half of what I watched yesterday, I was disappointed.
Yeah,
disappointed.
I will say
there wasn't variety in what he was doing.
I agree with you that it's not like I saw a plethora of pass rush moves that he was pulling out there. Like it was all
like two pass rush moves.
Right. He was basically just trying to bull rush the tackle the entire time. And maybe that's something he's working on, and that was what they wanted him to focus on yesterday. I don't know what the coaches are asking of these guys, but I will say as practice went along, I noticed him more, and his best rep was the last rep of practice where, again, he would have blown up Mitch Trubisky if he wasn't wearing the red non-contact jersey.
Well, that's good to hear because they need way more of that.
Yes. Yeah, I at the defensive end spots, I didn't notice Keldrick Falk very much yesterday.
Now, see, in one-on-one drills, he won twice yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, I was actually – okay, so – okay, Keldrick – let's talk about Keldrick Falk for a second.
Yeah.
I tried to watch him a bunch. He's 21 years old.
Yep.
All right? All him, Hill, and Tate are all 21 years old. And so they've all got a lot of growing, you know, still to do as football players. And when you watch Keldrick Falk work with that group, because that group works really hard, really fast, really deliberately, and there's a lot of hand movement and hand fighting in what they do. There's a lot of precision in the steps of what they're doing, you know, leading right foot, leading left foot. This step is this far. This step is this far. This hand comes up. I mean, it's when they do these pass rush things, guys, it's not just, hey, I'm going to go as hard as I can and just see what happens. I mean, these are moves and sequences that they practice over and over again. And you can see him, you know, a couple steps behind, you know, where the veterans are in learning all these things. You can see him trying to think his way through it. It's just not as fluid as when they do it yet, because he hasn't had enough practice at it. And so he's still working on it. You can see that, but the effort is there, and he is a big, long guy. And, I like his future. And so I was really pleasantly surprised when I saw him go into those pass rushing one-on-ones and win twice. And I was like, wow, that's great. So now as far as 11 on 11, I don't know. But
yeah,
over there, that's what I saw.
It's tough during 11 on 11 to focus on everybody, right? Like you're trying to get a wide enough view to see what's going on in the play, but sometimes you miss a lot of what's going on in the trenches.
I pick a guy a lot of plays that I'm going to
– right.
A lot of Jackson Slater. You know, I've watched, you know, a lot of the receivers. I've watched, you know, some of the, you know, the defensive linemen. I pick guys out. So you're right. You can't see it all.
Yeah, yeah. But Keldrick Falk, I will say, like, you're right. He's young and he's got the frame. And when you do see him out there, like, he is an imposing force. He's a big guy. And there's a lot of growth that could happen there because, again, he's young and he's malleable. And you've got him working with Aaron Whitecotton and Tanzel Smart and some of these other coaches. So I'm excited to see what some of these young pass rushers do this year. I do think that you need at least one of them to step up to make that defensive line as impactful as it can be.
You know, one of the interesting things when you bring that up you know, we're limited in what we can say about what we see on the practice field. And so, like, I saw John Franklin Myers taking reps at defensive end the other day.
Yep.
But I didn't want to say anything about it because I didn't want to get myself in trouble. And so I asked Gus Bradley yesterday about the versatility of their defensive line in mixing and matching positional players. And he said it, so I can say it.
Right.
John Franklin Myers plays big defensive end for them. And so – you know, I think that ability, because I think Jeff could play defensive end for them too if they wanted to. I think that really gives them some good flexibility in the way they use this group. You know, the ability to move a guy like that outside, you know, especially like in a running down where you could move him to the outside. I think, you know, it really gives them some good potential in it. And I think it helps your numbers in that group as well when you have some versatility there.
Yeah, you can tell that Robert Saleh wanted to have guys who can play a lot of different roles. And you're right. Like, maybe you have John Franklin Myers on the edge on a rundown, and Keldrick Falk can play on the edge in a rundown. And then you can bump those guys inside for passing downs where you get into, like, the NASCAR packages where those guys can just go out and pin their ears back and rush the passer. So overall, in the first padded practices, I expected the defensive line to crush the offensive line. And I will say, like, I think the defensive line probably did win overall over those 2 days, but the offensive line held up a little bit better than I expected it to.
I would agree with that. Now, you got to remember yesterday, Jeff played two plays.
Right. So take that with a grain of salt, right?
Yeah, that has something to do with it. But I would still say, you know, look, there have been stretches where the defensive line dominated play. But as we said, that group, if they're not the best group on the Titans are in trouble.
Yep.
Because they're the group this team attacked, that and wide receiver are the groups they really attacked the most the last couple of years. And so that group needs to be really good. And I would say, as a whole, the offensive line, while not spectacular, you know, did stand up better than I expected. You know, they've created some big plays in the run game. You know, just go back to Cam's big ball to Carnell Tate yesterday.
Yep.
Which was a spectacular throw, by the way.
I think
I had it at 65 to 70 yards in the air.
Right.
Which was incredible. But he had a perfect, beautiful pocket to throw from. That's why that play was able to be complete. Because that play takes a long time to develop, and he's got to be able to step into that throw if he's going to throw that thing that far. And so, you know, you could see he was wide open in the backfield, and you could just see it and then let it rip. And so, you know, he and Carnell get the credit, but the offensive line played a big part in that play happening yesterday.
100%. And again, still early. I remember the Bucs preseason game last year where we were all talking about how great the offensive line was, and obviously that didn't carry over into the regular season. So we'll see how it all plays out. But overall, offensive line, better than expected through the first couple of padded practices. 615.
Expectations were pretty low.
Yes, that is true. That is true. The bar was low, and they have exceeded it, which is good. That's what you want. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Hour number two coming up next. We'll bounce around a little bit, get into some college football, get into some big picture NFL topics, and plenty more Titans talk coming throughout the show. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up. 1025 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.